I have a memory of spending many hither and yawning days with Holly, and it's true, we did at odd moments see a great deal of each other. But on the whole, the memory is false. Because toward the end of the month I found a job. What is there to add? The less the better, except to say it was necessary and lasted from 9 to 5, which made our hours, Holly's and mine, extremely different. Unless it was Thursday, her sing-sing day, or unless she'd gone horseback riding in the park, as she did occasionally, Holly was hardly up when I came home. Sometimes, stopping there, I shared her wake-up coffee while she dressed for the evening. She was forever on her way out, not always with Rusty Trawler, but usually. And usually, too, they were joined by Mag Wildwood and the handsome Brazilian, whose name was Jose Ibarra Jaeger. His mother was German. As a quartet, they struck an unmusical note, primarily the fault of Ibarra Jaeger, who seemed as out of place in their company as a violin in a jazz band. He was intelligent, he was presentable, he appeared to have a serious link with his work, which was obscurely governmental, vaguely important, and took him to Washington several days a week. How then could he survive night after night in La Rue, El Morocco, listening to the wildwood chit-chatter and staring into Rusty's raw baby buttocks face? Perhaps, like most of us in a foreign country, he was incapable of placing people, selecting a frame for their picture, as he would at home. Therefore, all Americans had to be judged in a pretty equal light, and on this basis his companions appeared to be tolerable examples of local color and national character. That would explain much. Holly's determination explains the rest. Late one afternoon, while waiting for a Fifth Avenue bus, I noticed a taxi stop across the street to let out a girl who ran up the steps of the 42nd Street Public Library. She was through the doors before I recognized her, which was pardonable, for Holly and libraries were not an easy association to make. I let curiosity guide me between the lions, debating on the way whether I should admit following her or pretend coincidence. In the end, I did neither, but concealed myself some tables away from her in the general reading room, where she sat behind her dark glasses at a fortress of literature she'd gathered at the desk. She sped from one book to the next, intermittently lingering on a page, always with a frown, as if it were printed upside down. She had a pencil poised above paper. Nothing seemed to catch her fancy. Still now and then, as though for the hell of it, she made laborious scribblings. Watching her, I remembered a girl I'd known in school, a grind, Mildred Grossman. Mildred, with her moist hair and greasy spectacles, her stained fingers that dissected frogs and carried coffee to picket lines, her flat eyes that only turned toward the stars to estimate their chemical tonnage. Earth and air could not be more opposite than Mildred and Holly, yet in my head they acquired a Siamese twinship, and the thread of thought that had sewn them together ran like this. The average personality reshapes frequently. Every few years, even our bodies undergo a complete overhaul. Desirable or not, it is a natural thing that we should change. All right, here were two people who never would. That is what Mildred Grossman had in common with Holly Golightly. They would never change because they'd been given their character too soon, which, like sudden riches, leads to a lack of proportion. The one had splurged herself into a top-heavy realist, the other a lopsided romantic. I imagined them in a restaurant of the future, Mildred still studying the menu for its nutritional values, Holly still gluttonous for everything on it. It would never be different. They would walk through life and out of it with the same determined step that took small notice of those cliffs at the left. Such profound observations made me forget where I was. I came to, startled to find myself in the gloom of the library, and surprised all over again to see Holly there. It was after 7. She was freshening her lipstick and perking up her appearance from what she deemed correct for a library to what, by adding a bit of scarf, some earrings, she considered suitable for the colony. When she'd left, I wandered over to the table where her books remained. They were what I had wanted to see. South by Thunderbird, Byways of Brazil, The Political Mind of Latin America, and so forth. On Christmas Eve, she and Mag gave a party. Holly asked me to come early and help trim the tree. I'm still not sure how they maneuvered that tree into the apartment. The top branches were crushed against the ceiling. The lower ones spread wall to wall. Altogether, it was not unlike the Yuletide giant we see in Rockefeller Plaza. Moreover, it would have taken a Rockefeller to decorate it, for it soaked up baubles and tinsel like melting snow. Holly suggested she run out to Woolworth's and steal some balloons. She did, and they turned the tree into a fairly good show. We made a toast to our work, and Holly said, "Look in the bedroom. There's a present for you." I had one for her, too, a small package in my pocket that felt even smaller when I saw, square on the bed and wrapped with a red ribbon, the beautiful birdcage. "But, Holly, it's dreadful."
"I couldn't agree more, but I thought you wanted it."
"The money, $350. She shrugged.
"A few extra trips to the powder room. Promise me, though. Promise you'll never put a living thing in it."
I started to kiss her, but she held out her hand. "Gimme," she said, tapping the bulge in my pocket. I'm afraid it isn't much. And it wasn't. A St. Christopher's medal. But at least it came from Tiffany's. Holly was not a girl who could keep anything, and surely by now she has lost that medal, left it in a suitcase or some hotel drawer. But the birdcage is still mine. I've lugged it to New Orleans, Nantucket, all over Europe, Morocco, the West Indies. Yet I seldom remember that it was Holly who gave it to me, because at one point I chose to forget. We had a big falling out, and among the objects rotating in the eye of our hurricane were the birdcage and O.J. Berman and my story, a copy of which I'd given Holly when it appeared in the University Review. Sometime in February, Holly had gone on a winter trip with Rusty, Mag, and Jose Ibarra-Yeager. Our altercation happened soon after she returned. She was brown as iodine. Her hair was sun-bleached to a ghost color. She'd had a wonderful time.
"Well, first of all, we were in Key West, and Rusty got mad at some sailors or vice versa. Anyway, he'll have to wear a spine brace the rest of his life. Dearest Mag ended up in the hospital, too. First-degree sunburn. Disgusting. All blisters and citronella. We couldn't stand the smell of her. So Jose and I left them in the hospital and went to Havana. He says wait till I see Rio, but as far as I'm concerned, Havana can take my money right now. We had an irresistible guide, most of him Negro and the rest of him Chinese, and while I don't go much for one or the other, the combination was fairly riveting. So I let him play kneesy under the table because, frankly, I didn't find him at all banal. But then one night he took us to a blue movie, and what do you suppose? There he was, on the screen. Of course, when we got back to Key West, Mag was positive I'd spent the whole time sleeping with Jose. So was Rusty. But he doesn't care about that, he simply wants to hear the details. Actually, things were pretty tense until I had a heart-to-heart with Mag.
We were in the front room, where, though it was now nearly March, the enormous Christmas tree turned brown and scentless, its balloons shriveled as an old cow's dugs still occupied most of the space. A recognizable piece of furniture had been added to the room, an army cot, and Holly, trying to preserve her tropic look, was sprawled on it under a sun lamp.
"And you convinced her?"
"That I hadn't slept with Jose? God, yes. I simply told, but you know, made it sound like an agonized confession, simply told her I was a dyke."
"She couldn't have believed that."
"The hell she didn't. Why do you think she went out and bought this army cot? Leave it to me. I'm always top banana in the shock department. Be a darling, darling. Rub some oil on my back."
While I was performing this service, she said,
"O.J. Berman's in town. And listen, I gave him your story in the magazine. He was quite impressed. He thinks maybe you're worth helping. But he says you're on the wrong track. Negroes and children, who cares?"
"Not Mr. Berman, I gather."
"Well, I agree with him. I read that story twice. Brats and niggers, trembling leaves. Description. It doesn't mean anything."
My hand, smoothing oil on her skin, seemed to have a temper of its own. It yearned to raise itself and come down on her buttocks. "Give me an example," I said quietly, "of something that means something, in your opinion."
"Wuthering Heights," she said.
without hesitation. The urge in my hand was growing beyond control. But that's unreasonable. You're talking about a work of genius.
It was, wasn't it? My wild, sweet Kathy. God, I cried buckets. I saw it 10 times.
I said, oh, with recognizable relief. Oh, with a shameful, rising inflection. The movie. Her muscles hardened. The touch of her was like stone warmed by the sun.
Everybody has to feel superior to somebody, she said. But it's customary to present a little proof before you take the privilege.
I don't compare myself to you, or Berman. Therefore, I can't feel superior. We want different things.
Don't you want to make money?
I haven't planned that far.
That's how your stories sound, as though you'd written them without knowing the end. Well, I'll tell you, you'd better make money. You have an expensive imagination. Not many people are going to buy you bird cages.
Sorry.
You will be if you hit me. You wanted to a minute ago. I could feel it in your hand, and you want to now.
I did, terribly. My hand, my heart was shaking as I recapped the bottle of oil. Oh, no, I wouldn't regret that. I'm only sorry you wasted your money on me. Rusty Trawler is too hard a way of earning it. She sat up on the army cot, her face, her naked breasts, coldly blue in the sun lamp light.
It should take you about 4 seconds to walk from here to the door. I'll give you 2.